Wake up. Marvin Gaye. Is Marvin Gaye?
Not the way you doing it.
Yeah, I know.
What up? Once again, three brothers and a redhead, angry redhead.
Is that official?
No, it's not official. But stop.
Thank goodness.
Stop
cutting. I think I'd rather be a white guy than a redhead.
No, you're a redhead. And the one and only off the record, creatives get together and talk about all things culture, you know, current events, so on and so forth. We're joined with the wonderful Dan Duncan, the Don Bean, David Perdue.
What?
Who's been gone for like the last 6 weeks.
He's so famous.
What are you
decided
about?
To show up?
Gallivant in the world with Kevin Hart.
I wasn't here last week.
No.
Oh, we didn't talk about that?
You haven't been here in like a month.
I've been here, just not on this.
Bro, we ran off like three or four. JP came for your spot.
Yeah, he came hard too.
Hey, JP, that's my boy.
With all the offensive statements.
Absolutely.
I'm about to say JP probably had a little flirt. I don't got, guys.
I think one of our finest moments happened when he was on the show because someone commented on SoundCloud. If you're listening on SoundCloud, shouts out to you. Comment. This dude in general, I think he got 2 minutes in, heard some things JP was saying about furries or fuzzies costumes, like at Comic Cons and stuff like that. And he was like, this is too offensive. I can't make it. And I was like,
yeah, see, I would have never. I'm worried about brand.
He said that. He's like, I can't do it.
I was like, that's the least offensive thing this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, bro, you bowed out that soon.
Well, that brother was talking about popping pills and rolling dice.
JP, I'm worried about being on brand and stuff. Like, if he don't have those,
he don't care.
He got a brand.
I know, but like his brand is that. JP don't care. I love JP.
Hey, David, what you been reading?
I was supposed to be reading this book, Comedians. It in my book. This is the history of comedy.
Bro, okay.
This dude gave us the history of stand-up comedy from like the mob stuff all the way till now. So I got that. I literally got that, like just started kind of looking at that.
Dope.
Way out there.
Duncan, what you listening to?
Man, you know, I got called out on Twitter this past week. I needed to check out some D1, apparently. So you asked me
why
you asked
but
me.
There's other stuff you listened to, so you didn't have to. Right. You didn't have to go there.
Yeah,
because
we know how you feel about
pulling out the big guns early. Huh?
You know what I'm saying? Continuing beating the mascot.
Hey man, I wanted to give it a fair shot, and I gave it a fair shot.
I'm adding him this week. I'm gonna add him and say, listen to.
I got his car. I got his personal phone number.
Hey,
I do too.
You should hit him up and say, hey man, I know a guy that can help you write.
Nope, won't do that.
So that's what you want to say.
His name's Don Bean. He's actually very talented.
Is that what you want to
say? He is.
Yeah, can like, I say this real quick? I kind of want to say yes, but
Don, also because I've seen you save me on that song Missing Show.
Oh yeah.
Kanye. So I had a show. It was all about Kanye. And I was in LA, so I was not really focused like I should have been. This brother came and I could not follow what he did for 2 minutes. I basically early Kanye'd that thing where it's like you know what I mean, where you put somebody else on there, and I had two people on my set.
He never let me down.
I never let me down. That whole thing. But I killed that joint. Like I'm hoping when they, like I think they're gonna do a video of it.
Oh, fresh.
And I want them to just not put my part in place.
Nah, he's being
nobody
hard,
understands so. What's happening right now. So basically, what is Song Missing? What
Song Missing is a monthly show here in Atlanta where
variety show.
So yeah. You take it's like artists, like stand-ups, writers, different anybody. Uh-huh. You get a artist, and then you write about one song that artist has. So mine was Kanye West. It was Kanye West this month, and my song was Power.
Uh-huh.
And again, I was very excited to get that, and then a bunch of stuff happened, and I couldn't focus. So in Kanye West fashion, I just sampled a bunch of other people who were really talented. So I had a Don come out, and in hindsight, I should have had him close because. He came out there and ripped it with this Kanye 2 minute thing, and I was in the back.
What
like,
did you do?
It's a piece. He did like this. Yeah.
Oh, spoken word piece.
Yeah, and killed it. And I'm in the back like, oh boy. Like, I literally was back there. I was like, man, what are you gonna? Are you gonna follow that? You're not gonna follow that.
They just remember that it was the dope 10 minutes. They don't even splice it.
Oh, like, when they see that video, though, they're gonna be like, this was whatever that comedian is needs to stop. No so way. It was a Don, and then I came just on. Then I had our man Rob Hayes. Send a video in because he's a huge Kanye fan, and they showed a video
he
of him talking about the Power song. So like it was like literally like a Kanye verse, like a Kanye song that I put all these other people together to make me look good.
That's dope.
So I Kanye'd it. But shout out, I just wanted to publicly shout out Adon for that, because he came through in the clutch.
Adon, what are you listening to? Did I say no? What are you?
Yeah, how come I'm making
you happy?
How come
nah, man,
you got me reading like I read.
What's got you happy? I try not to ask the same person the same thing back to back weeks. So.
Oh man,
what's making you happy right now, Adon?
What's making me happy, man? Yeah. I was. Could it be something I'm reading or listening to?
It could be something you're reading and something you're listening to.
What's making me happy? I think it's, man, there was something.
It's not that great.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm just happy to be here. That's what I'm
happy about. Happy to be here amongst
the good people. What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive.
I'm happy. Nah, I was going to throw like Kobe Shea.
Oh, come on.
But I don't dislike Kobe like that. I don't dislike Kobe like that. I don't like him, but not like that.
You don't just hate him like Jason Whitlock just hates him, because that dude is.
Oh, Jason Whitlock hates everybody.
The greatest hater all of known to man. Most he's like
diabolical. Gotta go back and put water in Buck Johnson's Buck Nasty's mama dish. No. Of all the bad things in life, I happened to you and nobody else.
That shit is the
dolphin
worst.
Teeth. That was my favorite.
That's how I felt. That's literally what I felt Kobe's last game was like.
Oh, yeah?
It's just like they just pulled out all the greatest haters this side of the Mississippi. And they said, let's convene on Twitter and talk.
What's great, though, like real talk, though, that was the most Kobe-esque.
It was.
Way
perfect.
That's ever.
What other way should he go like, out? Kobe.
I had no issues with God. Like, this is Kobe. Like, this is.
Absolutely.
Shoot 50 times.
I was hating until the very end, because he Derek Jeter'd the last 3 minutes of that thing. Like, it couldn't have ended.
We was watching
better.
It over here, right?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, you wanted to watch the Warriors, and I was like, the thing to watch is the Kobe game.
But I did watch the Warriors, and then when the Warriors ended, I flipped it over, and I watched literally 7 minutes of magic.
But that Warriors, there was nothing to watch about.
There was nothing
game.
To watch.
That's so crazy, though,
serious?
That like Kobe.
About the Warriors game.
I mean, yeah, the first half.
I know, but watching Steph shoot from half court is so fun.
The first half, the second half.
But that's so amazing. It's like all this year we talked about like them chasing this record, and then like Kobe just comes through and steals that night. Like no one was talking about. I mean, Shannon Dude was like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
But did you see Kobe? That was crazy.
That's LA. That's LA for you. Right
I mean,
there.
Look. Can we be real? He should have got 60 points. He put up 50 shots. Let's not act like he didn't check up 50
maybe,
shots.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's see. You know what? I'm at the bottom. When he scored 81, how many shots did he take?
I don't know.
Man, you make it seem like he was under. Like he was over 400. He was shooting over 400.
He's shooting over 400?
Yes. So it wasn't like he was like, it was a terrible shooting percentage.
I mean, let's be honest. Kobe's never been great shooting percentage.
He hasn't. He's so. Great. No, what I'll say is, it's not that it's great. It's been good. Yeah. But he's never been like exceptional. His shooting percentage.
He's the Brett Favre.
But the thing is this, though. NBA. I just don't get how people hate on Kobe when you got 5 championships.
Yeah.
You got 5 of them.
I know why they people hate on Kobe, because he has this moment. All he has to do is grab the mic and say like, the most inspirational thing. And, you know, he could say it a halfway inspirational thing and people would still love it. And he gets up there and he throws shade at Shaq in his one moment, because he gets up there and is like, we did it the right way, or LeBron. It just depends on who he was. We won our championships the right way because we didn't run when things got hard.
I'm not mad at that comment.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it either.
I wasn't mad
but
at that comment.
You know
comment.
What? The funny thing is, I never paid attention to it until you just said that right there.
Oh, really? Yeah. I listened to it. I was like, geez, you're using your one moment to hate.
That's what all the greats do, though.
Yeah. That's what makes sense to me.
Michael did it. Like,
Michael
again.
Michael did it.
I think that's a bad way. I don't know.
He mambaed out and dropped the mic. Listen, I was not a Kobe fan growing up. I was an old Kobe fan. I'm more of a fan of this old Kobe.
I love how we just forgot the whole rape charge stuff, though.
No, no one forgot.
No one
Let's
forgot.
Let's be very clear. No one
Nigga,
forgot.
You forgot.
Yeah,
you tried to
some Kobe fans. I did not forget that.
Homie, very much remember.
Yeah,
all
it's
of
very
that.
Present in my mind.
Well, first of all, the accusations of rape, because he was never.
No, you're not going to try to black people Bill Cosby this thing. What did he do? They was in the bed. Like, you're not going to. No, we know.
Yeah, no. It was a settlement, right?
He was a settlement.
So, yeah.
But.
We know.
Sure. Okay.
Cool.
All I'm saying is this, though. Kobe, the NBA is different. Kobe was the last. Kevin Garnett is still, but him and Kobe are the last of a of a of a breed of athletes.
Colin Cowherd was making that point. Did you see his video about that?
People forget Tim Duncan in this.
Oh,
no one's forgot Tim
people
Duncan.
Forget
no, no,
Tim
no, no,
Duncan
no.
in
but
this.
But Tim Duncan's still thing. Not that type of player, though. Even though Tim Duncan
what
is a
he's
great
saying
player.
Is a different thing. Yeah. Like it's a,
I know what you're trying. I'm trying to put Tim Duncan in that category.
No, he's not in that category, though. Why he's not? A great player. One of the greatest players ever. But he's not that style of player like that. I'm going to eat you up. Like, I don't have any respect for my opponent in any type of way whatsoever. We're not homeboys. I am here to annihilate you. Like, you name another player in the NBA once Kevin Garnett and Kobe's done who has that tenacity about them. Like, you know, when they get on the court, it's like
Steph Curry.
We're not
two different things, though. I would say what with your characterization. Russell Westbrook would fall on
Russell
that
Westbrook
category.
Is definitely in there.
But the defining line I would make, though, is that like the thing about KG and Kobe is their level of the level of intensity playing for the level of intensity. I'm trying to remember I'm trying to remember Colin Cowherd's quote, because he was really defining like three different classes of players. And so he was like the Jordan class, right? And coming out of that. And then he did the Kobe part. Or no, actually, he put Kobe at the tail end of the Jordan.
Oh, I do remember the point. He was talking. Also,
then LeBron and
now there's
and
a new,
D-Wade is a different one.
He
and
says
then,
the group,
new one is like, just everyone makes money.
Exactly.
So there's no like need to really be competitive.
Exactly.
Because everyone is going to make money.
Exactly.
And whereas that's what it was. So the first group, like Kobe was a part of the like Jordan group, were like you.
The post Jordan group.
Yeah. You had to like really work hard to make top dot. Like it was a limited pie. And everyone couldn't ball out and make a bunch of money. And so LeBron and them. Yeah. If we can find the video, we'll link it up.
It was a good point. I do remember that point.
That's what I was thinking of.
But I'm talking about just the tenacity and the nastiness.
I feel like Tim Duncan doesn't get it because his face is the way his face is.
Yeah,
but I feel like he doesn't get credit for being an incredible competitor. Incredible competitor.
I would say he's an incredible competitor, but he's not. Go ahead.
Here's the thing. I would say, though, that's the defining line. Kobe would never take less minutes.
Yeah, he would. You know what he would do, though? Not shoot shots in the second half against Phoenix. Why does nobody bring that up?
Because he was trying to prove a point.
See,
proving a point. That ain't. He knew, first of all, so, like, no. That's no. not.
All you. Cause
I love
I'm,
how
I've
we pick out
com-
the one. We pick out the one
that's
moment
glaring,
in his old
that's glaring.
Career.
That's glaring.
He was making a point. He was like, oh,
Jordan,
you guys don't want me to
Jordan
shoot.
Jordan never do that.
Well, let's see how far we'll go.
Jordan would never do that. Can we agree on that?
Jordan would do that.
When?
Jordan would.
Name that time.
Jordan would.
Name that time.
Scottie Pippen would, because Scottie Pippen wouldn't go into that game.
Another point that somebody made, I think it was Colin Cowherd made this point too. He's like, how we make Jordan out to be like this ultra like competitor, like when he left teams fell apart. We forget that the Bulls were one game away from going back to the championship without Michael Jordan.
I agree.
So we make it seem as if like he played with scrubs.
Oh,
like,
no,
you know what
we
I'm
don't.
Saying?
I don't.
Everybody will like, others do. Kobe. The only reason why Kobe got a championship is because he played with Shaq.
Well, Shaq is the most dominating player of our lifetime.
And they say the same thing about LeBron, obviously, because it was the same. That idea. Right.
So what I'm
you
saying
drag
is,
you play for seven seasons in Cleveland and you drag that squad to the San Antonio Spurs, you get swept, but you're like 22 years old.
Right.
Like with Mo Williams
as
your next best player and Danielle Marshall
pulling up from three.
Like, so yeah, I feel you, though. Yeah. Like the Bulls were an amazing squad.
I just want one of these Kobe fans to explain that Phoenix game.
It's not hard to explain.
When trying to compare him to Jordan. Because I got a conversation with your boy about this.
It's not hard to explain.
If Jordan never does that. Can we agree?
Why are we measuring him to Jordan? First of all,
we know the greats.
This comparison, like this.
Why is that a weird thing to do? Why are we comparing Kobe? Because he wants that.
Yeah, he did say. He said specifically.
Come on now.
I want to make it as hard as possible for people to choose between Jordan and me.
So
that was his expressive point. Like,
but my thing
when
is
I'm
like,
done
is,
retiring,
if,
you got to choose.
There's such great nostalgia with when we talk about people like Michael Jordan,
and then the numbers.
90% of the people who
I don't
talk
think
about,
it's fair.
And a lot of us who talk never watched Jordan play.
That's
as
fine, but we know
like
we have.
Talk,
we have numbers.
We like to think
we have numbers.
Numbers lie, my friend.
30 points a game,
numbers
25
lie.
Points a game. Don't
so,
lie.
So, what's my man who averaged a triple double? Is he the greatest player ever?
No.
Oscar Robinson is not the greatest player ever. Why is he not?
One of.
Why is he not?
He had a season where he averaged. That was an incredible season.
No, I think it was for his career.
It wasn't for his career.
Yeah, no.
It wasn't for his career. But I'm pretty sure his career numbers were damn good.
I'm pretty sure.
I think
they
Oscar
are.
Robinson is amazing. I also think that the idea. I think triple doubles is just a strange stat that we've created to care about.
It's a cool thing.
It's something that we didn't care about 10 years ago.
I don't know how it resulted in his championships. I don't know. Like, you don't consider him in the.
I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is probably one of the, if not the most amazing player.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
That
the best player. So first of all, if we would have started this conversation off with show, who do you think the best player in the NBA in NBA history is? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say Kobe Bryant.
I'm going with Magic Johnson. Magic,
easy. Easy.
How? On what? On
because
he I love Magic.
Because first of all, his rookie year, what did he do?
He played all five positions. So I'm like, okay,
all right.
How do we number great? Balled out.
Redefined a position. Won 5 championships, right? Mm-hmm. He played with great players. He played with some all right players. He made everybody great and he dominated. He dominated during his era. He played against arguably the greatest competition we've ever seen in basketball history. We can't say that about Jordan. We can easily say Jordan played against probably one of the weakest eras, especially in his last 3 years in championship. That was a very weak. You had Utah was really the only.
They had 2 Hall of Famers. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Utah was pretty much the only.
Utah is the current Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
Like, you have 2 of the greatest 7 players in the league.
Yep.
And then the rest of everybody else. Yeah. Like,
and I would say, when he played against Seattle, and he played, and
Hall
I would
of
even
Famer?
Say,
did he have a Hall of Famer? He played against
Peyton and Kemp. We're on that. Yeah,
Sean Kemp. Are we making them Hall of Famers?
Gary Payton is a Hall of Famer.
Really, really,
one of the greatest defensive point guards of all time. One of the greatest defensive players of all time.
Okay.
All
right.
Don't do that to the Kobe argument.
No,
see, this is what happened.
I'm not doing that to
Kobe. I've gotten 3 Kobe arguments the last 48 hours, and I've been hearing the same thing. They want to deflect Phoenix. They want to act like Kobe.
That's what I'm not. I don't deflect. I just say it's okay.
You're one that hasn't done that as much, but I've gotten a bunch
of
like,
for him to do
what Phoenix? Yeah.
May I suggest something?
Okay.
But maybe we take this conversation to 4th and 10.
Bump that, because I'm tired of 4th and 10 getting like a monopoly on sports questions, and David gets the double dip when he wants to show up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, that's garbage.
He gets to talk about sports when he wants to.
Right. No.
I don't make Kobe the greatest. I make Magic Johnson the greatest basketball player of all time.
If you would have said Kareem, I'd have been all right.
Kareem is
all time leader in points, and he never shot. He shot but 1 3.
When you have the most unstoppable shot in the history of the league.
No, I'm not mad at that.
And then two, to be...
Magic Johnson had it too, though. He didn't have his, though.
Like, no.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
And
he
my
didn't.
Second thing is that when you are the... When you are the NBA Final MVP 16 years apart...
Come on now.
That is insane.
It is.
Like, that don't make
it
no
is.
Sense.
It is.
With Kobe, he didn't even get the first 3. Like, that was Shaq.
And I'm perfectly fine with that. And he's still one
guards.
Of the greatest ever.
Absolutely.
Guards.
I give it that.
He's still one guards. Of the greatest.
I don't know, man.
The difference, though, is that Kobe showed up for every single one of those games. Like, Shaq be taking games off.
We would have won.
We just keep forgetting Phoenix.
No, but I'm saying, like, throughout the... Like,
see, this is the thing. You're a Kobe hater.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
If Shaq would have showed up...
I just want one
Shaq,
Kobe fan to
Shaq,
acknowledge that that happened.
It happened.
And act like,
what
do you mean?
I don't have a problem with it. It happened, and I do not have a problem with it. First of all, we weren't going anywhere in the playoffs anyway.
See what I'm saying? That's why I don't put him at top
not
competitive.
This is the other thing. I believe that Kobe intentionally sabotaged situations to put himself in a position to win championships. If he doesn't sabotage that Phoenix game, maybe Phil Jackson doesn't come back. Maybe they don't trade for Paul Gasol. Maybe they don't make trades for like Lamar Odom and these types of players. What I'm saying is that was necessary. He's smart.
See,
he knows
that,
what he needs.
Okay, so you make it virtuous.
No.
Yeah, he does.
Yes.
I just want to be clear. That's what you do with
this
it.
Is what I'm talking about. What I gotta deal with.
I'm not saying that he should have given up. This is not. If we're trying to make this into some like little league, like this, it's bad for the kids. Like this.
No,
a bad example
it's just
for
a,
the
it just
kids.
Looks,
No, I'm what just, I'm saying is, like,
I'm only comparing it to Jordan. Like, Jordan would have never done it.
First of all, Jordan, he's not the guy that I like to build my, like, character after. Like, he's not.
I'm talking
that
on
dude.
The court. I'm just talking about being a dog. Somebody that says in the trenches, me and you, who one of us come
also,
out alive.
He also blackballed Isaiah Thomas from being a part of the dream team. Is that like something that's?
I'm talking about on the about? Court stuff. I'm talking about on the court. See,
that, to me, that's
what Kobe. That's what Kobe fans do. Deflect. Look at this over here. No. Pay attention to this other thing he did. Kobe didn't do that. What white Squirrel. Woman? What white woman in Colorado? Like, y'all always do that. Kobe don't know the white women. Y'all just do that.
What we can't say is that Kobe's last game, for better, that was. It was extremely entertaining.
It was great.
Like, hate it or love it, that was an amazing.
The greatest thing that happened in basketball in a long time.
Oh wow!
Cool. See, this
just in a long time.
Just
I thought that was going to go a few different directions, yeah. And I was like, whoa.
No, in a long time.
I'll give you that.
You name something that's happened recently, like since like.
I mean, the last great before that, I would say like last most memorable, probably Kobe's 81.
Golden State
Thank
just.
You.
That's the beat the record, and we're talking
no,
about
I'm saying moment, Kobe. That moment, that's that not a Golden moment. State moment. Exactly. That's just a game. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
he
that's a seasonal. That. Know what I'm saying? That's a season.
But
like,
he even outshined that moment. That's what I'm saying. Like, the moment that they broke
yeah, here's
the record.
How, here's how we know that moment is better than Golden State's moment.
No, I'm not saying it's not better. I'm not saying, but you're talking like something great
yeah,
else
you,
didn't
you
just happen.
Yeah, you
no,
said the greatest.
No, I'm not saying
it still is the greatest.
I'm just
moment.
Saying the 73rd. We're not gonna remember that game as much as we remember Kobe's game. That's all I'm saying. Like
that's
that particular
true.
Moment
that's
in time.
True.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. With
it's
I,
a great.
And this is the thing.
Though,
I like Golden State. I do like Golden. I like them because yeah. I think they're a likable group of players.
That's the thing. I don't think they are.
Yeah, why, I don't think they are either.
Why don't think they are?
No, I just think that they get a lot of credit for being likable, and I don't think they're actually likable people. I just think we've made it up in their mind
yeah.
that they're like Steph Curry
light
is
skin is it's that light skin is that light skin privilege.
You think he's a jerk?
I know Steph is a jerk. You don't put up a three and turn and walk
and
the other
shimmy,
way
and
shimmy.
That's
and then,
awesome.
That if I
right,
mean,
but
can
but
I be real,
that's
real quick?
Not nice.
Can I be if that brother was a couple shades darker, we'd be all over him.
No, he wouldn't.
You don't
would,
think we would?
You'd be on him. White
no,
folks probably be
no,
on him.
Be like, I how be dare he disrespect the game? I guarantee
no,
you.
No, I wouldn't. So
you think
you,
he's Cam?
You've been conditioned.
No.
You think he's Cam?
Have you seen what he does on the court? Like I'm watching. I'm like, oh, the Pistons. Everybody hits him. Everybody would have hit him. He is so disrespectful.
He's disrespectful.
The most disrespectful basketball player
but
I've ever likeable. Seen.
But
there's nothing likable about that
yeah,
level
I,
of disrespect.
That's what I disagree
his,
with.
He
it
does
is.
The equivalent of dabbing on every shot.
Yes, he does.
On every shot, and
that's
no
all,
one says
are,
anything about
how
it.
How is it likable when Draymond Green exists?
Yeah,
I like
Draymond Green.
I like Draymond.
Dog.
So there's aspects of Draymond Green that you want. Well, first of all, the media loves it because he
tells
he's,
you like
exactly.
It is. You ask him a question,
we
he'll tell
want
you
that.
Like,
oh,
like,
yeah,
people
absolutely.
Want that. So the media likes that.
Yeah.
I think us as fans, we're sick of the cliche.
Yeah,
I
like,
understand.
Like fill in the blank answers. I think you also like we love the way he plays on the court. He's a hustler. He,
yeah.
he
he's a hustler.
He's a
I'm
Dennis
not taking
Rodman.
Anything away from
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no.
So
part
I'm talking
it.
About the level, the level and how they play as a team.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You cannot remove the team aspect
no
of Golden
one
State.
Is.
Even
we're
no
talking about yeah, you're bringing up an argument.
No. I'm saying it's the same argument.
I agree.
Just because individually they may have some douchey. About them, I say as a team, we still love them as a collective.
And we're
they
saying,
play great
I feel like
basketball,
we're saying,
and they're easy to like.
To,
not
I'm
only
to figure out how to say this,
they're easy to like. Not only as a collective because they play well together, the basketball is exciting. I even think individually, they are likable characters, and I think especially after the finals when they won, when they were talking, and Andre Iguodala was talking about, man, we're just a group of guys who love God. We have Bible study together. We
sure.
love each other. We
sure.
all cared about each other.
Sure.
I went to the bench because I believed in the vision.
Oh, sure.
yeah.
Like those are the kind of things that you like, man. It seems like unselfish players
I
who are going.
Do
who
and, then,
like,
and then his daughter comes out in the interview and she's cute as
yes.
can be. Sure. All of these things. Paint
his wife
paint.
Is like this. Like she's like the Mary Berry
yes.
type of woman.
I'm saying what he does on the court. I'm just if I see that dude
but
do
that
on the court,
he
in a
doesn't do
game,
enough to demolish or diminish.
You're not watching
the
game.
The problem
you're
is
wrong.
That the Lakers have been terrible for too long.
yeah.
You gotta actually soberly think about this.
Yeah,
you have just admittedly said that I do not think about Lakers playing for the last 2 or 3 years.
They haven't played.
Right.
They haven't played.
Right.
Right.
Right. Except for
they
the Kobe game.
They played the Kobe game, but before that. Oh, and then when D'Angelo Russell snitched, there was.
Like one or two games.
That's
it. That's what I think is warping your perspective. When you're invested, like you are a Hawks fan.
I am. I'm a Hawks fan.
You're a Hawks fan.
Yeah.
Like there is something when you watch Golden State play And all of everything you said, I completely agree with.
Yeah, nobody's
just like no one is saying that it's not exciting basketball, mm-hmm. and that the players as they've come, and there are a bunch of like cast off and reject players. A lot of them, like Sean Livingston, should not be playing at all. He shouldn't have a leg. Right. Honestly, they wanted to amputate that thing.
Right.
But the level of disrespect and flossing that them fools do on people. If you have any investment in any other team, there's no way you're like, oh, they are likable as winners.
I'm not the only person who says this.
No, I get what you're saying. I'm saying
Though they're not fans of Golden State, they say, I cannot hate on Golden State because I like them.
Listen, I'm saying I don't know what it is that's blinding people from Steph being literally the most disrespectful player I've seen in the last. I can't think of another player.
So let me get this straight. Other players, they'll dunk and they scream in people's faces and they get all demonstrative.
Steph does that on threes. Go ahead.
So what I'm saying, like, what makes what Steph does any different from other players?
That's what we're saying.
That's what we're saying.
Is that
no one looks at it like that.
So I don't hate on players. I don't hate on, like, if somebody's having fun, like, I never hated on Cam Newton.
Well, then that's you're not the target audience of this. What I'm saying is that other people, there it is, right? Other people will hold the other players who dunk and scream on people, they are like, man, that's not how the game should be played.
Oh,
they're playing bad.
I'm not that
Whereas when Steph does those things, everyone's just like, man, he's just great.
I'm not dude.
And that's the issue.
And he's the most, understand why he's not on his behind
he's
every
not
time.
The most disrespectful.
Bro, watch the games.
There are other people who I feel like, bro, when I watch them play.
When he pulls up from three on their bench, on another team's bench, he could just put his head down and run down the court. He eyeballs everybody on the way down, like, look
that
what I just did.
Oh, shoot. turns around, backs up his homies before
that was the
ball.
That was the best thing
before
ever.
Before the ball goes down.
When I saw that, I was like, he's my hero.
Right. I know, but it's
the level of confidence.
It's amazing confidence. But it's disrespectful.
No.
How can those things
no.
not?
No, let's take the diss off of it and say, it's respectful. The way this brother strokes, turns around, said, yo, bruh.
Yeah.
Love.
Yeah.
It runs off.
No. Yeah.
To me, everybody in the crowd should be, that's my man. Even if he's in the way.
Yes.
Because how could, like, if he doesn't make this shot, he looks like an idiot.
Yeah.
But he is that, and he made it. Like, and he makes it every time.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know why this is hard.
Light skin privilege.
No.
It's light skin
privilege. The problem is for me, you guys assume, like, Kevin Garnett, all the antics. I don't have a problem with Kevin Garnett unless he plays the Lakers. I used to hate him. Like, oh, I can't stand him, jackass.
Mm-hmm.
But when he plays the Lakers.
When he played the Lakers. But when he played everybody else and they shoot and he knocks the ball, but, you know, doing a dead ball, and he I'm like, yeah, I'll do that too. I was like, that would be something I would do.
Here's the thing, though.
But even the screaming, the trash talking, the pushing, all that stuff. I mean, there are many players who do this types of...
Right. My point, though, is this. The Lakers are nowhere near contentious and haven't been for 2 years, 2.5 years, right?
Okay.
And so my point is that if they were and Golden State was flossing on y'all like that...
There's no way.
There's no way you would just be like, oh, that's a man. That's really likable and cute. You'd be like, yo, Kobe, kill
them.
Come back and destroy them. Do what you gotta do to take them.
I'm gonna concede here because I...
Maybe.
Because I hate Paul Pierce.
Yeah.
And now that I think about it...
That's what that dude is about.
It's very similar. But I will say... It's not necessarily the skin, because they're very complexion wise. Like, if you're going to play
I'm halfway joking with you.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I'm halfway joking.
I'm going to give you something here because I hate Paul Pierce.
Yeah, I do
and,
too.
And
I
now that I think about that, I'm like, God, that's very similar.
It's because after the game, Steph points to God. And
I mean,
he's
you're right.
He's a vocal Christian.
He CHH'd us into believing that he's a good dude.
Whoa!
No, so hilarious. But I will say, I do hate, oh my gosh. And he's from the crib too.
Yeah,
Paul
he's from
Pierce.
LA.
I could not stand Paul Pierce.
It's the same thing.
I can't stand him. Yeah, that's true. But it's not because of, like, it's not because he's his antics. It's just because I just didn't like him.
He's a Celtic.
But Dellavedova is a dude that I'm like, yeah, I can't stand him. I cannot stand Dellavedova.
Right. And Dellavedova doesn't floss anything.
Yeah,
he's just
nothing,
he's just
But I would say LeBron, I feel like LeBron is very braggadocious. Absolutely. And I don't have a problem with LeBron. Like, I just don't have a problem with him. You're not the target person.
Like, everything you're saying, I'm like, okay, I can see your consistency. Yeah.
And I love the rage within Russell Westbrook. Yes. I think he's like the most bipolar player to ever play
probably
the ball.
Our
the
point game, is, what is Steph doing that's making no one see?
He's Jedi mind trick the world.
He's the ultimate, like, I can't imagine playing against. I would fight. Every time I'm like, why is no one fighting him? Like, he gets in front of your girl, son. I'll say this. In front of your girl, your mom watches. You don't let him turn around.
But I'll say partially.
Turn your back. Yo, son, he turned his back to you on a 3-point shot from half court.
It's like a beautiful thing.
I would say partially is because he's. There's a couple things. I was like, because he's doing things that no other player has ever done.
Uh-huh. It's calling it shot. That's what that's how great this moment is.
I would say he's doing things that no other player has done. Two, he doesn't look like LeBron.
That's what's going to go to that, but
he doesn't look like LeBron. He looks like everybody.
Unassuming. He's very exactly. Not be able to
exactly.
Okay. In the league.
And so everybody can connect and relate to him.
I give you that.
And the
so
third
right.
thing is that he in a lot of ways has been an underdog all his career.
Absolutely.
Like, when they won a championship, nobody gave them credit for that championship. It was always, well, if the Cavs would have had Irving in Love, or if they would have played a harder route to the playoffs, mm-hmm. or they were healthy. And so it's like, all right, well, you know what?
Yeah, they didn't have to play the Spurs. They beat who was in front of them.
Exactly.
And I don't begrudge them for
at all.
Right. So I think those three things are extremely.
I'm only talking about the level of disrespect on the court. That is literally all
I think
I'm
those are the reasons
about.
Why people will ignore the level of disrespect. That's what I'm saying.
Here's real talk.
But can we agree it's disrespectful?
Can we agree?
From the perspective,
it's only disrespectful on the same level of which everybody else is disrespectful.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yes, it is.
It's not just that way.
Crucified for it.
That's all I'm saying.
Nobody gets crucified for it. That's what I'm saying.
Did you sell any more Kobe Bryant on them albums this past week?
I'm pretty sure I did. I'm pretty sure because I had literally like every 5 minutes there was a tweet about like
Kobe Bryant,
and I wanted to forget that I made that song.
But you did this the entire state of Florida, right? That happened,
bro,
right?
Bro, I'm going to tell you, that's how serious I was about my Kobe fandom. So in 2009, the day the Lakers put the Orlando Magic out of the finals, I said, I'm doing it, fellas. And they were like, don't do it. I said, I'm doing it. I said, I'm going up there and I'm performing Kobe Bryant on him in Orlando. We were in Orlando the day the Lakers put the Magic out. And the crowd was rocking with me. That's when I knew Orlando wasn't about it. I was like, this is
somebody's just throwing something at me.
I was kind of hoping that like somebody would run up on me. Like,
Smiles and South Star. Like, those are the only people out of Orlando to give you anything.
Yeah, I was like, I could have done this in like Philly or New York at all.
Not at all.
Like, I probably wouldn't have made it like into the first verse.
Yeah.
Yo, it was real. I was like, I was rubbing it in, bro. So anyway, but I'm glad that we all agree that Kobe's the greatest player ever. So we're about to go ahead and move on to the next topic. So what we're about to do is we're going to go into an interview with my brother Tadashi. A couple weeks ago, we had an opportunity to interview him, but we are finally finding space to include him. Not because he's not important, just because we had other things that were more important. not at all. He's the most important. So anyway, but it was definitely a dope interview. We talked about his album, his new EP, Better Yet, and in life, man. So y'all check it out and enjoy. Tadashi the floor, what up, bro?
Hey man, how you doing?
I'm doing good, blood cuss. How you doing?
Good. I'm good, man.
All right.
I am good.
Make sure that you, we're going. This is it. This is the start of it. So you are on with the Off the Record crews, Adon,
hey.
Dan, and JP.
What's up, sir?
All right, what's up?
Can you hear him?
Hey.
Yeah, I can hear him a little bit. He was a little faint, but I can hear him.
He's a little gay, is that what you said?
Hey.
a little bit. Just
a little bit of town.
Word, bro. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Oh, first of all, thank you for joining us because you are a big deal, and I love you because you're just my boy, man. My brother, and good friend.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for reaching out, man. I'm excited.
Yeah. I know that a lot of people, I mean, just because Twitter interactions don't really dictate friendship, so a lot of people don't get to see us interact, but we're still cool. We still love each other. And you are busy these days. Traveling the road, What you doing, man? Tell us, give us a little rundown of what's happening in your life.
Yeah. So I started this tour called Winter Jam. It's a it's definitely a CCM tour, contemporary Christian music tour, but it has its moments where they try to venture out and add in some rock or pop or hip hop. And so I'm definitely the hip hop added part, the additive. And man, it's just been a busy time. The tour is 52 dates long, and it spans from the winter to the spring. Even though they still call it Winter Jam, it's still going, and we're about to be in April. So I'm like, all right, guys, Winter Jam.
Gotta make that money.
What I realized is when they said jam, they didn't mean like music. They meant like jam it all together into one thing. They just gonna smash as many concerts together as they can and throw you out there and do them. So, but it's been good, man. It's been, you know, just had a chance to kind of take what I do creatively and present it to a different group of people, have that kind of ability to advance what it is that I feel I need to do artistically. So that's been fun, bro.
Word. So I'm not gonna keep you long, but I do have some questions. I want to know, like, there's been somewhat of an evolution. I mean, and that's obvious when a artist grows and as they develop, as we can hear some of this stuff in your new music. But just as an individual, as a human, like, how has Tadashi evolved, and how has he become a new, kind of like a new person, different from maybe, you know, two albums ago?
That's good. I was going to ask for the context. I was like, evolved since yesterday? Like, I'm not mad at my wife today, so that's a good moment. Like, evolved from when?
Don't be a jerk, bro.
Man, two albums ago. So two albums ago, I was in this headspace of wanting to fight to be seen as someone who could do anything. I wanted to prove to the world that if I wanted to do it, I could do it. That's just my mindset. If I say I can do it, or if I get challenged to do it, then I want to pull it off. I want to kind of but over the years, through many different moments in life, whether it's loss or it's suffering, or it's you know, just music being different from then to now, whatever the case may be, I just found myself on this project wanting to be a person who could be true to who I was, where I was. I didn't feel I think in times past, I wanted to make music that other people thought was good and that I could still be proud of.
Yeah.
But in this moment, I was like, I want to do what I want to do and look back at it and say, I'm proud that I did that. And if 100 people liked it, so be it. I wanted to do something that.
Do you really mean that, though? Cats say that, and I love it because I say that too.
No, I definitely meant it.
You really mean that?
I say it too, but sometimes I don't mean it. With all my heart, I meant it. I went to everybody I talked to, everybody at the label. I was like, look, this is it. I don't know what y'all gonna get. Like, I mean, as far as I don't know what you feel about it, but. Right. This has to be true to who I am in every way. So I fought to not have, you know, legitimate features. You know, there were legitimate artists.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, because, yeah, like, you have a song like, what is the joint? The 55 joint. In My Life, is it? And it's like, you're not even on that. Not even on there. It's the sister singing. And
well, I'm on there.
Well, you're the background. You're not the focus of the song, right?
Right, exactly. And that was kind of my motive. So I wanted to do something. Everybody's doing, you know, I think actually, if we're honest, you kind of started this trend in Christian music, at least hip hop, where dudes started making songs for their wives, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Showcasing the love. Come on, somebody.
So I noticed that historically that wasn't happening prior to We Can Be More. So I was like, okay, all right, this is a opportunity for me to express love in a different way.
Yeah.
But it had always been typical of, let me do a song where I kind of creatively say the same thing again. And so I was like, let me do something different that's true to who I am. And I just grew up loving Boys and Men. So I was like, I'm going to write a Boys and Men song. So I wrote that joint.
Oh, yeah.
And I sang it.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, hey, this is good. Like, literally repressed. But it could be great. Maybe you should get someone to come in and help. And she Crystal Nicole showed up and made that mug great, man.
Dope. So I did have a question, but you brought up something that I want to kind of touch on before I go to this next question.
Okay.
Like, so what is the genuine, like, what is the genuine response to this album? Because there is some things you're doing differently on this album.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is the response from those people who are true Tadashi fans? You obviously know who those folks are. And what is some of the consensus from folks who probably are like, you know, middle of the row fans? Like, I rock with them. I'm familiar because I love the label and so on and so forth. What are some of their responses?
Right. Honestly, man, I feel like, and this is my, you know, assessment over the last 3 weeks. I feel like those two groups have kind of been merged to an extent. Mm-hmm. The hardcore fans are like, yo, I rock with him because I like his voice, or I like the way he says certain things, or he can really write, or whatever the case may be. But this particular project had a lot of people who were on the fringes of who I was as an artist, or even, hey, I just kind of, I rock with you, like you said, you know, just because he's with the label. These people kind of came into the fold, so to speak, where it was like, hey, he's made me a fan. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he could do this stuff. Like, I'm a fan now.
Yeah.
And across the board, if I'm asking other artists, other websites, if I'm asking different radio stations, majority of the people are telling me that this is one of the first projects I've done where if they've gotten negative feedback, it's that it wasn't long enough. That's the only thing they've really heard. So
yeah.
That was kind of a joy to me. Again, I started out with the whole thing saying I'm doing what's true to who I am in this moment without any type of desire to cater to what people would want to force me to be. And so to hear on the back end, people are with it regardless, it's kind of a joy to me.
That's dope. All right, so the question I was gonna ask you, kind of talked about it a little bit, is that the one thing that I noticed in this album that's significantly different is your confidence and your vocals. Like, you're singing way more on this album, and there's more confidence. And I love "I'm Good," and like songs like that. I'm not gonna take credit for this, but I just remember having this conversation with you a long time ago, telling you that you need to be more like a CeeLo, and you're like, this is your lane. But you know, it's whatever. But what gave you, like, what, like, how did that happen? Like, how did you just become this dude who was like, you know what, I know I can rap, but I'm gonna start singing more, I'm gonna start writing more balladish kind of ballad like songs and embrace this singer side of me?
That's good. That's a great question.
I know it's a great question. Man, that's why I asked it.
That's why you asked it, because it's good. I was impressed that you came up with this. I know JP's in the bag probably handing you questions they're writing down.
Yes.
That's probably
yes.
what I was assuming. But,
yes.
But no, man. So I was at home one day getting ready to pack up to roll out to the studio, and I had this melody in my head that I kept humming over and over, to the point to where my wife was like, can you be quiet? And whenever that happens, it makes me want to do it more. Like,
absolutely.
It makes me want to keep singing it. So I kept singing it. And when I got in the car, I started putting words to it. And then it hit me like, this is something I need to record. So I went and hit up one of my boys, Benjamin, who plays guitar. I was like, B, come to the studio, please. Roll with me to Reacher Studio, and let's go in here and get some work done. And I had ideas of melodies and feels and so forth and so on. So he played some stuff, and we kind of started that song out from there. And that process is what really kind of gave me the confidence to say, I know that I'm more than rapper only. I think I've always been a person who appreciated music from different spheres and spaces, and I wanted to always explore that. And so that was another reason I said, I'm gonna do what I enjoy. I'm not just gonna stick to rapping. I'm just gonna do what I enjoy. If I had the mood, like I thought I had a brief thought, but I didn't explore it well enough. But I was like, man, I'm gonna just pull off some like Gregorian chant in this mug. I'm gonna do whatever I want and be creative as a mug, come into this world that I live in where I'm always doing stuff like this. And that's really what it was. It was just this joy. This is probably the freest I've felt making an album, but it's definitely the most fun I've had in a long time making music.
Dope. So last question. JP's been struggling with his marriage recently. And new father.
I know it's good.
That's what he's ready to drop some nuggets on you.
Yes.
Give him needs some insight. Like what's if you can just give him a 3-minute nugget on marriage, and especially somebody who newly married, not newly married, because he's been married about 3 years now.
Five
years. Okay, I don't really love you that much. That's why I was like, I don't really care. But new child, and so struggling with this, like, oh man, how do I, you know, give JP some insight? He just needs some counsel.
First of all, I think you need to find friends who know how long you've been married. That'll help.
Cool. Yes.
It shows they care. It shows that they're invested.
Thank you.
That's one thing you got to do. Secondly, man, I would question your pastors. I don't know where you're going to church, but I'm totally kidding.
Terrible church. Iron is a terrible, terrible church.
It's a horrible place to go.
I don't know why anybody would go to that church.
Oh, gosh.
That's awesome. That's hilarious.
Nah, but
so yeah, man.
Do you get opportunity? You have a radio show still, right? Are you still doing a radio show?
I do. Okay. I am still doing a radio show.
You have one of the
Saturday
best
Saturday night at 10 p.m., brother.
Next to Adon, and I don't even know if you've ever met Adon. Have you ever met Tadashi?
Nah.
Tadashi, Adon Bean, Tadashi meet each other.
Hey, can you hear me, sir?
Yeah. Hello, Adon.
Hey, sir. What's going on with you?
This is like a voice off right now. I feel like there's a...
It's a voice off.
I feel like between you guys have the best voices in the world. What has that been like for you, the whole radio show experience? And it's almost like opening a new career for you.
It is. It's been fun. It's been humbling. And then it's been... challenging, because I say it's fun because they let me do it. Here's what I've learned, and I say this knowing that it may
get you fired,
it may come back around to but at the end of the day, people let people with status do stuff that they might not ought do. Like, it just might, like, hey, you sing and people buy your records.
Yep.
Why don't you come and teach at this school? Like, what? Why would you let me teach? I didn't go to college for this. I don't even know why would you let me be a teacher here? I don't understand.
Oh my gosh. But bro, you let out all the secrets. Don't do that, because I get opportunities like that.
I'm sorry.
And I want to keep
you're
getting
right,
those opportunities.
Right. I'm sorry.
Well qualified.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'll let that slide. But it's been fun because they let me do what I want. Like, they've given me freedom to do everything. So I produce the show, I arrange it, I find the music, I enjoy highlighting different artists, and it's just been a fun moment. It's been challenging because I just realized that it's also humbled me. I'm not. When it comes to technical radio, I'm just not as good as other people are, and so I'm just trying to grow and get better.
Yeah.
The best part about it's been educational, so I can see, hear the things that would make for a great radio station reach into a city or a select group of people. And so, yeah, bro, that's been amazing for me. I love it.
Hey, so tell us what the station is and how can we listen to it?
You can go to Tadashi.com or engineradio.com, NGENradio.com, one or the other. There's a link there for you to click onto the show. The name of the show is called Sirium, and it's really my venture off into highlighting dudes who I know have hearts for the Lord, but are making great music.
Oh, so I'm on there all the time then, obviously.
All the time.
That's
all
what
the
I'm
time.
Saying.
You know, except for this one song that they stopped me from playing. It's Islands in the title. Like, they asked me not to play it again.
Still censored? Jeez.
They really did.
Well, no, bro. Thank you, man. I love you, man. I appreciate you for jumping on with us.
No doubt. I love you too, man.
Hey, man. So you have a wonderful night. And we'll have you back on the next time you drop like 6 songs out of nowhere on us.
Okay.
Word.
Got you.
Thanks so much. Okay. What up? So I figured probably one of the good things to do is we got a lot of feedback from Twitter, you know, when we kind of asked them what we should kind of talk about a little bit. And I want to say first a thank you to everybody who weighed in with some great responses. I'm gonna just we're gonna kind of do a lightning round and just talk through some of these.
Let's
drawings,
do it.
You know what I mean? So yeah.
Let's do it.
So we're gonna shout out real quick. Is it okay for Christians in states where it is legal to partake in marijuana for recreational
absolutely
reasons? That was a grouchy absolutely coming from show.
Absolutely.
One of my biggest regrets about being in LA. Is that,
well, first of all, we gotta, are you a Christian? Because this, the jury's still out on that one.
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
So what are your regrets about being in LA?
Is
let's talk about
it's not partaking.
It's not partaking in the herbal.
It's
not
white
partaking.
Girl? Oh.
It would have been all encompassing.
Oh, I see. I got you. No.
That's a side B reference. Tune in for side B on that one.
But no.
It was so many dispensaries. So many. I was like, man, this no wonder.
Everywhere, bro. Place. All over the place.
Is recreational legal in Cali?
As you said, recreational use?
Yeah.
No, it's not, but it's not criminalized. It's like almost, I think it's, I'm pretty sure it's decriminalized.
Right, that's New York.
Yeah,
too.
And so it's
so
almost
it's not a felony
easy,
now?
Right, yeah. It's so easy to get a medicinal card as well. So it's almost like it's like, yeah, you know, you smoke some marijuana, you're fine, you're right. But,
so y'all can judge me in this, but.
No, man, we value your opinion, bro.
Thank you. I very much enjoy it, just like I enjoy alcohol. Anyone that has anything to say about weed, I think I judge them in return of like judging me, because I would absolutely smoke weed if it was legal.
Yeah.
Like what would be wrong with that?
Right. Why do you feel like you would smoke weed? Like what about weed makes you like what about that?
Because dude? I enjoy the recreational use of tobacco, which is no different in
like
my
I've
mind.
I've never smoked
weed.
Tobacco or chewed tobacco, which is crazy because I've smoked all kind of weed. But what is the pleasure in tobacco? What like, cause I've never experienced it. So
I think it's positive association, right? So I grew up dipping tobacco, like playing sports. Like it was the camaraderie of sitting again. Okay, now I'm about to put out how white I really am. Like sitting on the back of a truck with my friends after school, before practice, hanging out, throwing like a dip in, feeling like I want to throw up, trying to keep my stomach together, and then you know it's just like it's one of those like stupid rites of passages that you have as a young like 16-year-old kid in high school. And so I think from that point on it's something that developed a habit, and then I mean there's probably some level of just that pot one you could spin it as positive association. Some people would spin it as like addictive or an addiction of how I'm able to relax. It just immediately kind of brings me to that place of like I'm chilled out.
Yeah. I will say this is to bring the Christian aspect into it. I mean, just like anything, there are some things that the Christian should totally abstain from, right?
Okay.
And that they should not engage on any level. And then there are things like marijuana where there's liberty to engage, especially if it's legal, but it may not be wise to do so, especially if you're the type of individual who has a low tolerance to something that can be addictive. Or if you have the kind of personality where you become a slave to something and it makes you, and you make poor decisions and it masters you, so you can't do anything without smoking marijuana. Like I know individuals, I definitely knew individuals. I still know a few individuals who before they do anything, they gotta smoke, or every day they have to smoke. And to me, that's very problematic. Anything that owns you in that regard is problematic, especially for the Christian. Now, I don't have any problem with a Christian smoking weed in areas where it's legal. And I almost don't have any problem with a Christian smoking weed where it's illegal. Because I do feel like the reasons, and I view it like this, I view it like sampling to a degree. I feel like there are laws.
I've never
that
heard
are,
that before, but I respect it.
I feel like there are laws that are set up that just are unrealistic to some way to keep or unjust in ways, and that need to be broken almost, and because of the system and why the government benefits off of the prohibition of a certain thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the criminalization of it, which I totally, it should be legalized just because of that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then lastly, I think, which is a huge proponent, is the health, for health reasons. Not to say that it's a cure for anything, but it does. I've seen documentaries, I've read stories, especially in kids with autism, how it helps, stop seizures and pains, mm-hmm. and behaviors and things of that nature. So I'm an advocate for marijuana on many, many levels. And I will say this, I went to Amsterdam when I was a Christian, and I partook in some of the herbals.
Okay.
That's what's up. I went to Denver.
So,
I live in Atlanta.
Did your son have seizures?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
He doesn't.
Would you consider him giving him ATC, which is like the
I would definitely, but in Georgia, it's not legal.
Right?
ATC is the component. Oh, that ATC. Yeah. There's the other component. Gotcha. They're the two components.
It's and not ATC. It's not legal. And so, in states where it's not legal, there've been parents have been, prosecuted.
Right, and you can lose your kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. And so, I wouldn't do it because any kind of trafficking of that particular drug across state lines is obviously illegal.
Right. Okay.
But if it presented me that type of conundrum, and I would probably figure out how to
make it work.
Yeah, when I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease eight years ago, I guess. I had no health insurance or anything like that. And so but one of the greatest pain management keys for that is actually marijuana. And I didn't actually smoke before then. I smoked in high school just because I mm-hmm. wanted to smoke in high school and I wasn't a Christian or anything. But I remember when it first happened, I felt like I didn't know if I had this like moral quandary or like, man, am I allowed to do this? Like all, you say what you want, like I'm free in Christ and all this stuff, all but right. you still have ideas
absolutely.
Of legalism or just what's religion, what is right. allowed or what isn't admissible. And then it just was like I just got free from all. Like I literally, and I'm not. This is not my advocacy for everyone to follow the exact same route that I did, but I have none, like no conviction whatsoever about right. doing that. I completely agree with you though that I would never make. I don't run around making the case like, "Hey, go out and do this." Right. Like everyone makes their own decisions for themselves, and it's not anything that is done. Addictive on my end or at mm-hmm. all, but absolutely, like in terms of what the benefits that can occur of it. Now at the same time, let me be very real, there are strains and ways in which marijuana is processed at times that have nothing to do with anything natural whatsoever.
Absolutely.
Like
yeah,
that thing
true.
Is extremely can be extremely dangerous, and so I'm not making any type of blanket statement regarding what regarding just usage without any restrictions or just anything out there, just go out and smoke. Like that is not what I'm saying at all. But there are key ways that actually you can identify and actually find out what it is that you actually are putting into your body. And but just in terms of a root basis of can this help you, it is up there with any host of things. And it's actually I think it's criminal that it was ever given, what was it, a class 2 distinction or whatever. Or I can't remember what the classification it was given.
It was given the highest
class.
Yeah,
it was given. It was just, it's insane that it was ever given that. And so, which was its own incarceration, mm-hmm. money-making Absolutely. Thing. So, yeah.
So you have anything to add to that, Dave?
No, I'm just gonna say I'm probably the most pro weed dude that's never smoked weed.
Yeah, I, on the record, I've never smoked weed either. Mm-hmm. But there anyone out there that is against smoking weed? I just really struggle. I think you better be a Baptist that abstains from drinking and all those other things.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know folks who
you better
are like
draw
that
line strong. And draw that line very, very clear. But other than that,
cool. I'm gonna keep it moving. Should there be a minimum wage in the United I guess it doesn't really clarify much further than that, but yes, let's just, I'm assuming a federal minimum wage, and should that be raised?
I would say,
and $15 is, I think, what's being floated as the idea.
California 15, is 17. My man,
shout out to Sebastian Ridley Thomas.
California is 17 by in the next three. It's going up to 17 in the next like 6 years or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Anybody thoughts on that?
And I know this hasn't stopped me in the past, but I'm of a lot of the issues in our political landscape, this is probably the one that I'm least informed in. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that I am a proponent of raising the minimum wage. I don't know if 15 is the magic number or not. Right. I do believe that because of living wages, it $8 and $9 and $10 just doesn't seem it off top. Off rip, it doesn't seem like that's feasible for people, because they'll just continue to be a part of the working poor and you're just feeding into the system. And I'll say this real quick. For me, I am in a place where I make more money than I have in the last 3 years, but I still feel like I don't make enough money, right? So I have two kids on the autism spectrum, and I do not qualify for certain government assistance. But if I really want to give my kids the type of health care and services they deserve, I have to cut out a lot of, not even luxuries, I mean just needs that I have. Like, our grocery budget has to get cut dramatically. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's so many things. I don't have a car note, so it's just already just like, yeah, just things that we, so it, off that, I'm like, man, I know I make a decent amount of money, more, way more than the average household, but well above the poverty line, better yet. And for those people who work minimum wages, who may live in cities or states like California, where the cost of living is astronomical, it's hard for me to see how you can raise any kind of family and say like you should be content with the minimum wage as it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I
want to get David and Dan, I want to get your thoughts on that definitely, but two things for you, Sho. Do you think that do you think that raising the minimum wage de-incentivizes people to get out of low-paying jobs or to work? Like, I've heard that argument. You know what I mean? You understand? I don't think I'm framing it the best, I think you understand what I'm asking, I guess.
Right. Well, minimum wage is supposed to encourage you to seek higher employment and make your worth higher than what they are.
I think the reality is that some people just live in that world. Like, I mean, there's always going to be a class of people who work within this particular realm, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and to me, honestly, I would say if we want to have a better, healthy economy, we have to make sure that people have discretionary money to spend, because that helps the economy. So the more money that I'm able to push back into the economy and to buy and to spend and to patronize businesses is healthy. And if you raise that for folks, now the problem is, I think, is a mix between this philosophy of, well, it doesn't incentivize folks, and the idea that business owners and business people are trying to find ways to cut expenses as much as possible so that they keep more money in their pocket. Mm-hmm. This is just a good excuse for them to say, well, it's going to mean that I'm going to hire less people, or I'm going to have to fire folks, because now what you're doing is you're
Obamacare is something that
it for, has changed I think for me. Yeah. So those are my two perspectives. Is generally, so the collapse of the unions in this country has caused basically a lack of power in the workforce in general. Yeah. So, well, and while I kind of disagree with unions, I think this is a federal union that's coming through, and they're saying, okay, this is the wage, right? I think that a minimum wage should, in fact, motivate people to. So there's a term in baseball, like cost of replacement. Hmm. So as a business owner, there have been multiple times where I've looked at assistant editors, shooters, in particular, and been like, for me to replace you, it will cost me double what I'm paying you, so I will continue to raise your salary, because I cannot replace you. Mm-hmm. And I think there are people like that, and that doesn't require a level of education. It really is based off of
a comparative advantage. Effort.
Yeah, exactly. And so that drives business owners to raise your salary, and I think that that's possible. And to what Cho's point is innovation is allowing people to get rid of the workforce in general. So you have restaurants that are now starting where you walk up and use an iPad to order, mm-hmm. and you slide a card connected to that iPad, and there is no human interaction on that front counter. And I think you're going to see more and more, specifically fast food chains or quick service restaurants doing stuff like this, because they will need to. $17 or the food, or it's going to be passed on to us
to the
cost of food, and you're going to see a burger cost $12 at McDonald's because that's what now the cost of producing that hamburger was.
Not to cut you off, but I think one of the arguments that's being made is that those costs are raising regardless, and that the cost for people to actually afford these things hasn't raised, you know, comparatively. Totally. And so the argument is that we're trying to raise the minimum wage because we're trying to keep up with the cost of goods and services and products at this point.
And that would be a point I couldn't speak to. That's like where the players union in sports really does. Yeah. They're the constant watcher of what is the pie, what percentage of the pie are the players getting. And that's where, I mean, unions can be very effective. They can also be a deterrent as well. And so there's always a double edge to everything. Oh, but
true. Any thoughts on that?
No, I'm for the raising of the minimum wage for nothing. Another reason is just we're too rich of a country for people to not be able to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like just live without worrying about so much. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense.
When you look at like not even just home ownership, but like apartment rate for leasing and things like that in California, in D.C., in New York, like
in Atlanta
at this point, like it's absurd how much money. I think the Bay Area has been almost exclusively priced out San Francisco has been priced out completely regarding like that no families are in San Francisco. Like it's so hard that like it has the lowest per capita of children or whatever, because it's just why do this? Right. It just makes no sense. But this actually dovetails into the other question that came into as the economy continues to change, what are your views on entrepreneurship? It's a very broad question.
You can see it. Go ahead, finish.
No. That's it, really.
Yeah. I think you can see entrepreneurship in many different ways. I think you could say it as individuals who start businesses and people who are somewhat innovative within business. But I will say that to go back to the previous question, I think it's the onus is going to be on the Christian on how to be innovative in trying to figure out how do we continue to save jobs, right? Because if we care about the flourishing of cities, and if we care about the flourishing of people, and if we care about the least of these, then we don't want innovation to push out jobs and opportunities just so that it saves the big bosses, you know, some money. And so in a sense of entrepreneurship, I think what we need to start thinking through is how do we create jobs that not only make us great opportunities, but it continues to care for the least of these, right? So social, you know, entrepreneurship or, you know, jobs that are going to be beneficial for communities and peoples that consider the whole of our city. And we're not just exporting jobs outside of the country just so that it makes us, you know, a quick buck. But I think it's imperative, man. I think these are interesting times because, you know, our nation has been through many different developmental changes, and the technology change, we're seeing that human interaction is becoming less important. And I think it's so interesting that it's not just human interaction, but I also feel like the body, like humans in general, we're just not important. Like our bodies are not important anymore. And so anyway, I think that's I think it's quite important. Yeah. So,
yeah, my perspective on this one is entrepreneurship is difficult, and what you're getting into, and as I've experienced and helped try to coach other people, getting into entrepreneurship, for whoever asked this question, whatever you're going to do, like sign up. What I, you know, when I first started doing this grind, I really thought, you know, 6 months is real hard to start. Like, that's what you should shoot for, absolutely, to start a company. It's, man, it's a 2 to 3 year like grind to get you kind of get something to have some momentum. And, but I do think that we are coming into a day where what Sho said is true, but also with everything, there's kind of that equal and opposite reaction where people want to associate with real kind of smaller kind of homegrown brands that they can kind of sign on to. And we've experienced that to some extent at Fourth. I've experienced that with Oh Sleeper, which is a local furniture company that I kind of helped start. And so both of those companies have, you know, being local, being kind of small, being kind of having that grind to them, I think people have kind of come alongside those. And so, yeah, I mean, entrepreneurship is difficult. Hiring people is difficult. We at Fourth, we had a full-time employee when we launched this thing, and we quickly realized, like, that's not sustainable to get this thing going. So, yeah, it's tough.
That's what's up. I'm going to keep it moving. Got two or three more real quick. The lack of diversity in American evangelical theology. I feel like we could, with preparation, convene a group of people who could really talk about this in extensive. And I think, Sho, you have probably some good thoughts on this. Do you want to just give us a few?
Okay, so the lack of diversity in evangelical theology, right?
Yes.
I think part of it is that when we talk about theology, we automatically think of great white men and reform. Like, we don't think about great AME preachers like Allen. We don't think about Absalom Jones. We don't think about Thurman. We don't talk about Cone, because they don't follow the tenets of Reformed theology to a T, and so therefore we don't consider them great theologians. We don't think about Carter G. Woodson's. We don't think about Frederick Douglass and his autobiography, because in general, I think ultimately, and I think Absalom Jones and another preacher talks about this. He says, when you have a people who are fighting for human dignity, they don't have time to talk about like salvation. Yeah. Like, they don't have time to break down the theology of what it means to be saved, or the theology of ecclesiology and end times, because we're too busy trying to convince our brothers that we're human beings. And so when you look at African-American writers in history and in antiquity, what you're going to find is them talking about the theology of pain, suffering, love, and dignity, rather than talking about polity and ecclesiology and things that, honestly, people of privilege deal with when there's nothing else to talk about. Because even when you go to Europe and the church is being persecuted, and or maybe better yet, in North Africa, when the church is being persecuted and drug out to the Coliseum, they're not arguing about those things.
Right.
They're like, yo, are you down with us?
Yes.
Okay, you down? So that means we're dying together.
And it would still be one of the greatest, like, reformed tenets in terms of always pointing to the cross.
Absolutely.
Like, at the end of the day, like, everything that wasn't touched on, the cross was never not a part of the message that was given. You know what I mean? Which you can say has not all, you know, there's been times when you've seen other churches or other theologians kind of get lost in the weeds, and you're like, okay, but what is this? What's this ultimately about?
Absolutely. So yeah, there's a lot, and I'll say this is a book that I read recently. It's called How Africa Shaped the Christian Mind, and Thomas Oden, he gives 7 things that Reformed theology or Western Christianity can thank Africa for, and one of them is just the idea of systematic theology. The first individual who gave systematic theology to the church was Origen. Origen was a systematic theology thinker. He kind of created the idea of, this is how we systematically walk through scriptures to formulate a theology and idea. Other thing was monasteries. North Africa was known for creating monasteries and monastic thought. So there's five other ones that are just great. That's but awesome. Oftentimes when we think about diversity, we don't think about Africa. We just kind of stay in America. So what I would say is just, man, just for us to expand our idea of what theology is and evangelicalism is as well. Because I don't, oftentimes when you say the lack of diversity of theology, well, I'm like, I think it's heavily diverse. It's just, I'm just reading people that you're not reading.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. Let me talk. Did you have
something to say? I was just going to say, I think you should read theologians, and I think this is kind of what everyone's saying. The theologians that I try to listen to are theologians that were persecuted while they were also writing about what they were believing. Mm-hmm. So that kind of plays itself out even in white theologians and like in the Luthers that were coming out of like the Protestant Reformation. He was persecuted, not black.
But I would say Luther was, I would say I understand what you're saying, but Luther is not a good example because that Joker was a racist and an anti-Semitic. So
again, I'm not saying he was infallible.
Yeah, right.
But I am saying that he's going, typically in that you are going to find someone who is dealing with the important pieces of what is theology.
That goes
for kind of the AME preachers and the
I would say like Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Yeah, Bonhoeffer is another
great. And I would say a lot of guys in from, you know, and like you said, everybody has their problems, but a lot of the Dutch reformers, because of the life issues and the tensions that they were going through, they had a different perspective of reforming theology.
So I think that's kind of what you were saying, John.
Yeah, I mean, and even when you look at like the arts, you know what I'm saying? Like when you know when somebody was living that life and they singing that song, as opposed to
right.
So you know, I heard someone else tell me about this song and this story, you know. But like,
it's like Kanye, bro. Like Kanye, he got in that different tax bracket, and it's just like it's like, man, Kanye. Like he in one of his lyrics, he said a 38-year-old with rich brother problems.
Yeah,
and I'm like, yes, it's obvious, Kanye.
Yes, we know
because you rapping like you rich right now. Yeah.
So I got a question. The comeback of black cinema, it's a very broad thing. I'm not really sure.
Did it ever leave? Was it ever here? I think they're talking about because of the nation, birth of the nation.
And okay, yeah.
Maybe because...
And Barbershop?
Ryan.
Three? I'm not even clowning.
I heard that movie was amazing.
I want to see it.
Barbershop 3 was amazing?
No.
Seriously, I really want to see that thing.
I had somebody who I respect the movie said that it was one. It's a very important movie.
Because the messaging that they're trying to communicate?
And just, you know, I mean,
because the movie Barbershop, the last two.
Fair. But maybe they had some time to think about it.
When you say two, are you counting the beauty salon one? Because the first one I thought was good, actually. I thought that was actually good.
I guess.
The second one I thought...
It's been a moment, I guess, since I've seen it.
I just didn't think it was bad. Let me put it like that. I didn't think it was bad.
I've heard nothing but good things.
I feel like, from the promoting of the movie, it feels like they're trying.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't say that in a good sense. I say that in the, like, they're trying, like, really hard.
Oh, trying to push a message?
To push a message.
Okay.
We got to save our streets. These youngins are... And I'm like, dope, but like, let's not do it in a cheesy way.
At least we doing it.
It's the Christian film equivalent.
Oh no!
Like that's what I feel like. It's that. And I'm like,
so many funny people though in that thing. Like
it is some funny people, but I also feel like with movies like that, they usually give you the funny parts in the trailer, and then when you go to movies, like, yo, they gave us all the funny parts.
Maybe I don't know if y'all saw Barbershop. Somebody tweeted.
It's getting. You know. I mean, it's critics are heavily supporting it and saying it is something really, really
good.
Well,
look here. I may mess with it. It got a 92 on Tomatoes.
Didn't Kenya Barris help write it?
Which is, oh, if she behind it.
Kenya Barris. No, the writer Blackish.
Blackish dude.
He's not.
Right.
Malcolm D. Lee was the writer.
He was?
Yeah.
Was he involved with it?
I'm sorry. Malcolm D. Lee was the director. Yeah. I'm sorry. Kenya Barris, absolutely. Yeah. And Tracy Oliver.
That's why I was like, oh, okay.
I feel like Blackish is falling off a little bit, man.
Stop. What?
It's amazing.
Did you see this last episode?
What?
The Johnson & Johnson?
Yeah.
I did not watch it.
That was good.
Okay.
They had them. And it was a moment I wanted. That's what I said. They started getting into feminism. I said, I'm going to post that. They're going to make a lot of white people I know mad.
It's amazing.
So I feel like it's still a good show, but I feel like it's not as amazing as it was the first season.
I think it got better the second season. It's just that the second season is long. This is like the 22nd episode of the second season. Like, you might, are you sure you're not thinking about the early second season being good? Because it's been running for a long time.
Now, there was some good, first season. Like the church episode was amazing.
Yeah.
That was the second season. That was second season.
Right.
Episode, like when they went to the swimming party. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was some really good second season stuff. But I feel also there was a lot of low second season.
What's like the worst? What's the worst second season?
Because we didn't talk,
I feel,
about
like the last couple ones has been like okay. Like, and like,
I like the babysitter idea, because I like the idea of, or not, who's going to take over the children? The nanny, yeah, part. Like
the nanny
them
was
moving
dope
to a different like tax bracket and being like, is, yeah, this wrong for nanny me to was, have a nanny?
Nanny was cool. Nanny was cool. But there was a couple. I would have to look at the episodes on my Hulu and just like.
And then I don't think we ever talked about the whole the them addressing Black Lives Matter.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That, yeah, episode, that episode, I felt like I was supposed to really, really, really love it.
I knew you was going to be that dude. I just felt it. It's that sense I was telling y'all about. It was, my shoulder,
I felt like
was,
I was supposed,
my shoulder
to,
was shaking.
I felt like I was supposed right to really, really love that episode. And I went into it. I was like, yo, this is. And I saw a Don tweet. I saw all these people tweet about it. And I saw people like, let's. And I went into it. I was like, well, let me watch this thing because I want to be moved.
Oh, man, it was overhyped then.
Yeah.
Probably. That's,
and
yeah,
I went into it. I was like, oh, okay, okay.
Got you. Yeah. That's,
and I was like, I was like, this is no. This, I'll tell you what it wasn't. It definitely wasn't a Different World episode where they were in prison having a discussion.
What you don't know is that I walked
away. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Dan is like so off the loop right now. But what I'm saying is it was a good episode, but I felt like once again, I don't like things that I feel like there's a reach. Like you're trying. Like I feel like you're,
what are they reaching?
No, I just felt like they were trying so well, like trying so hard to make us cry or to make us like pull my heartstrings. Mm-hmm. And it's do it in a Blackish funny way. Like I felt like that, it just wasn't really that funny. And they just tried to say, you know what, we're gonna skip the funny and do drama. And guess what? Y'all don't do drama well. You just don't. Like this is not, cause some of the overacting, it's like, it just wasn't, it just, I just felt like it's just like, leave that to another show to pull off a police brutality.
That's the thing. Who? What other show?
I mean, like, I don't know. Maybe To Get Away with Murder, to, you know, American
Scandal,
Crime.
Scandal kind of did
it. I don't
it.
Know. Like,
my thing is, but yeah, but.
I just,
don't,
I just
Blackish.
Didn't feel like Blackish. I just didn't feel they did a great job. Now, there were certain parts of it that I thought were, oh, that was pretty cool. That was, you know, I get what you're doing. Mm-hmm. The Ta-Nehisi Coates reference.
Oh, they love
they
him.
They made that brother God. Like, they just did. Like, every, like.
Yeah, he's best friends with somebody.
Oh, yeah, show. They definitely get that brother all the shout outs. But I do feel like the poking of fun, like if you quote him now, like, it validates you as someone who's in the know or know what's happening. So
woke.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway.
Yeah, because all of that really good conversation.
But I don't understand the question.
Yeah, the idea was really about
Black cinema.
Cinema, I guess. So we can talk about the Birth of a Nation trailer that
I didn't see that yet, but I will watch that movie.
Yeah,
that trailer was. What did you think about the trailer? I thought the trailer was powerful,
bro. There's a reason that movie got bought up.
Yeah,
and it got bought for a record breaking price.
I was ready to I didn't want to hate on it. I wasn't ready to hate on it, but I was also like, I've heard so much about this. Uh-huh. This trailer will not affect me.
Yeah,
I was like, wait a second, I was wrong.
I don't know, man. I guess I'm gonna have to say
think of that shoulder again.
No, the slave movie. I'm somewhat familiar with the Nat Turner story, and
this,
so it's just
this ain't
like,
though. This ain't your mama's slave movie. You know
I know,
what I'm
but
this
I know, is, I know it's not. But it's also like
still a slave movie.
Yeah,
but so
because you have to create a protagonist in a white person, right? So the story still built around this amiable white character that helps drive the story along to some degree. So, I don't know. I'm not judging. Go ahead.
Is it though? Like you said, it has to be. I'm saying
I
understand
to some degree
theory,
from what I've understood of the movie, of the script of the movie.
Okay,
that's what it's about. Like it's about the owner of Nat Turner's owner, who you know, his father passed away, and the son became his master, but they grew up as best friends. So now there's this tension. Mm. Best friends now becomes slave and master.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's like, okay, you know, I get it. I mean, that's a compelling story to some degree, but That's not the Nat Turner movie I want to see. I want to see the one where his boy is running around chopping up, killing white folk.
Do we know that's not in here?
No, it's, I'm pretty sure it is because we see that. But I'm just saying, but in general, I don't want to see black. I don't want to see a slave movie.
Understood.
All so, what I'm saying is I don't want to see a slave movie.
What, and I understand why you don't want to see a slave movie. What I know to be true in this country is that slavery is like algebra. The majority of people that look like me, they learned about it in high school, and then they stopped thinking about it until they're like reminded of it in a very like prominent way, like a movie that you have to see kind of thing. And it's like, especially for me, in a in like creating conversations amongst my white friends.
Are they going to see this film?
Oh, absolutely.
Are the people who really need to see this film going to see it?
I think
I don't think the people who need to see the film saw Mississippi Burning. I don't think they saw
half the movies. I think this movie is going to be way more popular than Mississippi Burning.
Absolutely not.
What I would say to what I'd say on this end, though,
I think it's popular because black people have more stake in, they're more in tune to the kind of like the social media and the push. But I don't think this is going to be any different from any other slave. I hope I'm wrong, yeah, but I don't think it's going
to
be different.
To your point, there was an interesting, I can't remember this woman's name, but she's worked for years with Oscar campaigns and just overseeing that whole process. She took great umbrage with the whole Oscar so white thing or whatever. But what was interesting,
I don't know what umbrage means. What does that mean?
She just took, she had a huge issue with that idea or whatever.
Cool.
Like she took a
exception. I keep feeling like this is mince right here.
but one of the things that she said about like about the idea of when she was talking about different Oscar campaigns, and every actor and every movie has its own push and campaign to get recognized during award season. And she talked about the issue with 12 Years a Slave. To your point, show is that for so long, so the movie came out and it got heralded critically. Herald everything, but towards the end they actually came up with a campaign that was just like, it's time. And the thing was, we know you've put off seeing this movie because essentially it makes you feel bad. Now's the time for you to see this movie, because all of these people avoided watching the movie, all of these tastemakers, all of these people who actually dictate a lot of like recognition and awards and balloting and stuff like that. And so to that end, it's not a stretch to think that although this was heralded and set records in terms of being sold, will it have the impact in the zeitgeist of the populace to have less regular average American Caucasian people go out to see the movie?
Nope.
I don't know.
It's not.
I think it will.
It's just not. I think so. You as a filmmaker are excited about it. I think you, because you are connected to what's happening in the film world, is going to see it. I think like the new kind of like young millennial black movement are excited about it because of the all of the accolades it's getting. But I think there's a large contingency of people who are just like, nope.
Yeah, I started thinking about it. Like the same people that went out and saw Deadpool, not gonna go see this. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, it's gonna,
like, why do they, for what's the benefit? What's the social capital in them seeing this movie?
Yeah.
Nothing. Like why would you wanna make yourself feel bad?
Yeah, like I don't,
I'm not spending $20
for and me and my is, and that's the thing, this is not even necessarily like a feel, it's a feel bad movie, right. I imagine, but it's also like, this is not a slave movie like your regular slave. Like this is one where like, like this is a slave movie, you like, why don't, like if you watch your first slave movie, if you white, like, why don't they just fight back? And it's like, oh, this is the movie where they do.
But guess what? You're still losing the end.
So, well, I mean, everybody knows that. But you don't see it. Like, you
still losing the end.
You never see it though on film. In this, like, you've never seen this story.
So my greater umbrage I take with this film.
Look at
you. It's just the fact that I feel like it continues to perpetuate this idea of how white people want to see black people in Hollywood. And that's my, just like, why?
What exactly? What? Yeah, just as a slave in general.
There's a couple. And go back to this idea of monoliths. There's a couple theories that I feel like are created around African Americans in film, and I feel like slavery is one of them. But I would say, if you want to put slavery in a particular genre, it's the biopic. It's the historical story of black struggle, and they love to see, And I'm talking about white progressives. I'm not talking about conservatives because they're not going to see the traditional. They probably won't see a black film in general. But the white progressives who
the slave narrative,
who accepts their guilt. No, it's not just slave narrative. It's the story of black struggle and pain. So it's gonna it can be about a singer who went through some hell, but they've come out of it on the other side of it. But it's always going to be historical or a biopic. And I feel like that's how they want to see black people in Hollywood. But, you know, we don't get just the regular black films about regular black families doing regular black things. And like, I don't know when's the last movie that ever happened, like outside of an independent artist who spent their money to make something that most likely black people didn't support and go see. So what I'm saying is like the studios are gonna in a way they're gonna continue, and I always feel like so
what's the regular, just so I'm clear, what's the regular white film about regular white families doing regular white things? Because all movies have conflict, they have a story,
the one thing is contemporary movies. So like
Judd Apatow movie,
exactly.
Ever.
So it is funny you said that because I was exactly thinking about Judd because I was watching 40. What is the movie called? 40.
This is 40
something, or this is 40.
This is 40. Yeah, this is 40. 40. My wife and I was watching that movie, and I was like, "Man, this is a mildly entertaining film. I am enjoying it." And I was like, "I wasn't crazy about it, but I was like, yo, I'm engaged. I like it. There's some parts that I think are, I was like, black people don't live life like this is not a black story. Like, we can't get Will Smith and Kerry Washington to like get together and make a movie about a black family where a guy's investing money and." Like, he's losing his record label. He's struggling to sign an artist. Like, a Brown Sugar, right?
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when do we get, where are our Brown Sugars? That's all I'm saying. Like, and we don't get those contemporary stories. We get stories about James Brown, about Jesse Owens. We get movies.
The same brother plays them all.
We get those movies because it's about black struggle and overcoming adversity. And it's continuing to show.
I think on a few levels, you've like really simplified it, but I think for the sake of this argument,
I really need for you to explain yourself because you can't just say like I've simplified it and then like
I don't, and I didn't mean that like dismissively. I just meant
that's exactly what it was.
Too much seriously,
simplified it that I don't even want to address it. We're just gonna move on.
I'm so sorry. Did not mean to come off that way because we've had this conversation before, and so that's why I was like I don't want to have the conversation again.
Okay,
but there's so many. I think that there's a level of idealization that you're doing around white films that you're not giving credit to black films that do get done, and so they are done. You not seeing them doesn't mean that they're not done.
Yeah, you can
them
name,
not being promoted
but you can
is
name,
a different argument.
So there's two things I've,
and so
I
that's
said,
why I'm saying they're simplified.
Right. So there's two things that I said. I said one, I said Hollywood studios, one. There are people who make films like Tyler Perry, and you can name your three or four films that get made by black people that I may not have seen. Yeah. I don't know. Your Pariahs in those films. Yeah.
That was a good movie.
Yeah. Okay. But how many of those movies come out a year?
You want to start counting? We can go to Shadows and Act.
Yeah, I follow right Shadow now. And Act, but the thing is like there's like one movie a year that comes
and
out.
That's wrong. That's what I'm saying is it's wrong. Like, well, let's one, go to Shadows
one
and
movie,
Act, and we can go
one movie
this.
A year that comes out that
we
deals
can't
with.
Just throw out a fact and then repeat the fact as though it's a fact when it's not a fact.
All right, so we go to this.
That's
website.
My point.
So
that's why I said I didn't want to do this part.
Okay, but, so what is the basis of what is the metric? What are we saying? Like, what are you saying? You're saying there's a plethora of movies that are made a year?
What I'm saying is that there is more than one, and so when you throw out a number like three or four, I'm just like, look, there are more movies than we are giving credit to at this point, and I'm 100% on board with the argument with the level of visibility these movies get, but that's a different argument as opposed to the movies aren't made. That's a different thing.
Well,
movies not being made, and then movies not getting movies not getting made is one thing, which I disagree with. But then the other side of it is movies being being hyped by Hollywood, I can understand part of that argument. Then the other part is, I think what we do on some level is we don't go see our movies. Uh-huh. We do not promote our movies. We go past them on Netflix. We don't watch certain movies. There's Ava DuVernay had so many dope movies prior to Selma that we don't, we just don't talk about these things. And so that's my, that's the type of thing that I'm talking about.
Okay, where so
there's a level of way that we're not investing in ourselves.
Okay, so yes. Now I will say, if the metric of a movie being made is anybody making a movie and having some IMDb credit, yes, there are millions of movies made. And you can even say that I've made movies, and because I have a credit on IMDb, and that movie is a black film that's been made. I'm not going to credit that movie as a film. What I'm saying is legitimate films that have budgets with actors that are recognizable. I'm not talking about a documentary that, you know, somebody made about some hip hop. You know, I'm just, there are films that I think we all can agree to. It's very similar, like if we have a conversation about a hip hop, like there are underground artists who release albums that are very credible, I guess you can say, in our world, but they don't get recognized, right? Because they just don't have the particular budget. Like the Oscars, I mean, not the Oscars, but the Grammys will never acknowledge these particular artists because they just don't have the backing. They probably didn't sell enough records. They just don't have the notoriety. At some point, we have to say, all right, this is the standard of which the movies in which we're talking about. And for me, that's what I'm saying. Like, yes, there are movies made, but we, at some point, we do have to say, okay, what films are being legitimately made that have some sort of budget, that have good quality to them? Because a lot of these movies that we're probably talking about on Netflix, the quality of them are not even well done. And I've seen a lot of these movies, and I pass through them, and I'm like, I'm not about to watch this movie. The writing is poor. Now, I'm not saying that black people don't make decent projects. I'm just saying, like, at some point, the movies that are greenlit, and a lot of us have the power to promote and to remove these films. But if, for instance, if you have individuals like Jada Pinkett, I'm not the kind of individual that's going to tell somebody what to do with their money, right? But if Jada Pinkett and Will Smith have a production company, if Tyler Perry has a production company and they're making movies, and but then they want to complain about, it's the continued argument that I have about the Smiths. Don't boycott the Oscars. Don't have a problem with the Oscars when you have the power to make, to produce particular films, and you're not doing it. So for me, in a sense, I'm like, well, I don't see us doing anything differently within the context of the power and the framework we have. But we're making the same type of movies. But all we do is, to me, is just the biopic, the slave movie. So,
word. So there was another. There's other questions, but we should probably just move on to the scratch of the weeks, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
I don't normally run that for it. So.
Yeah, so we're gonna go to the scratch of the week. My scratch of the week is Kobe. That's it. I started with him, and I'm ending with him. So, hey, good Mamba out. Greatest basketball player to exist after Magic Johnson. Yep, and I'm going with that one. I don't care what any Michael Jordan fan says. But no, I'll say definitely, it's definitely the end of an era. Definitely the best player since Michael Jordan. I'll probably give Michael the heads up. I'll say he was a greater player than, and you know, pound for pound, probably a greater player than Kobe. But I will say that I am not excited about this new NBA. I'm not excited about the players who are coming through. I think with his retiring, is a different type of NBA. And I don't want to sound like that dude who is like,
back in my day.
Yeah, back in my day. But I just, you know,
it's
a different type of basketball. It's a different type of basketball. And, you know, part of it is the fact that the Lakers are terrible and I've lost interest in watching basketball. But it definitely goes to Kobe Bryant.
My scratch of the week is Fox Searchlight, because they were actually the people that bought Birth of the Nation and paid, I think, what will be a really fair price at the end of the day for what I think is going to be a very influential movie.
That's what's up. My scratch of the week goes out to Kerry Washington, who was in the movie that debuted Confirmation about the Anita Hill hearings. She also executive produced that film, and it was directed by Rick Famuyiwa. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but also he was behind the director behind The Wood, Brown Sugar, Talk to Me, and Dope. And yeah, that was a great film, Confirmation. Definitely check it out on HBO.
You know, this is my first time over here about Scratch of the Week.
Yep.
Okay, so tell me what I'm supposed to be doing.
just anything that, you know.
Your shout out.
Yeah, shout out.
Shout
out.
You know what? I'll be a company man right now. I shout out Kevin Hart. Shout out. The reason why I'm shouting Kevin Hart, because they actually did pick up the show. Comedy Central picked it up. I know it was like a thing I didn't know, but like the whole Heartbeat production thing and like the pocket, like the brand, like his branding and everything, like what's happening. I'm like, it's very inspirational. You know what I mean? Like he's a rock star comedian with his own shoe and, you know, his production company's getting money. So, I mean, yeah. Also check out your boy on Heart of the City or whatever the name of this show is coming on Comedy Central this summer. But yeah, shout out to Kevin Hart, man. I mean, like, not like he needs it, but yeah, shout him out. I'm shouting him out. My scratch of the week is, yeah.
I'll give you guys a Don show. I'm just glad. Last time we had a debate like that, it was me and David, and we were going in on Cam Newton and became the most listened to podcast in Force Records. So I'm just hoping great things for that debate right there. Let us know what you think.
Nobody cares about that debate. No,
certainly not one almost at 1 a.m. in the morning.
At all.
Hey, we on that grind.
Yeah. So, but hey, thank y'all for listening. Go ahead and listen to Side B.
Peace. Yeah.